Welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe, a podcast where you'll get to learn from the experts in the field of sex, love, and relationships. The mission of the Sex Talk Cafe is to normalize the conversation on sexuality while building a bridge between the sexual and spiritual. I'm your host, Susan Morgan Taylor. I'm a holistic sex therapist, intuitive coach, and specialist in women's sexuality and feminine spirituality. I'm the founder and CEO of the Pathway to Pleasure Collective, where I help women and couples around the world restore intimacy, save their relationship, and get back to love without feeling like they have to sacrifice themselves just to keep their partner happy. Thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe. All right. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in to the Sex Talk Cafe today. I am so excited about my guest today, Maddie Jo Kauser. We have a fascinating topic today for our listeners. The topic today is about purity culture and sex. And can we use those two words in the same sentence? I'm so thrilled to have you today, Maddie Jo, because I really feel like this is an issue that shows up a lot, actually, believe it or not, in my practice as I work with women and couples, the religious programming and the sort of like the subtle ways that shame and not so subtle ways that the shame just weaves in there, and religion can really do a number on people, and especially the purity culture aspect. So I'm really excited to have you here today and just so looking forward to our juicy conversation on this awesome topic. Before we dive in kind of to, you know, the juicy details, I would love for you just to share with our listeners a little bit about you, what you're about, and just kind of give us the overview of who you are and all the cool stuff we're going to touch on today.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, my name is Maddie Jo Kauser. I am a self-proclaimed actor, author, shameless oversharer. So I was a pastor's kid, born and raised in rural Missouri, and proud purity ring wearer. You know, I come from a faith where it wasn't just forced upon me. It was truly something that was really important to me. I took it very seriously. It was, you know, very personal to me. Until I moved to New York City to become an actor, and then my entire identity imploded thanks to Tinder and my Jewish roommate. So all of my secular world experiences just sort of culminated to force me to, question, reinvent, and reconcile my religious identity and my sexual identity, all within the container of living with and working for the 1%. So thus, in 2015, all of these weird life experiences that I was having, I decided to write about on the internet in a blog entitled God, Sex, and Rich People. And people are like, how'd you come up with that title? I'm like, I mean, it was literally just the summary of my life. I didn't think too hard about it, you know, but with the passing of marriage equality, I decided to share in my first blog post called God and the Gays about how the LGBTQ community was sort of the catalyst for me questioning what I had been taught about following Jesus, right? And so then from there, it just took off. It sort of before, you know, evangelical, purity culture, all of these terms became hashtags all over the internet. I was sharing these stories in a smaller community, and then it sort of like blew up from there. And I started, just sharing stories about my dating experiences and how, again, to use your words, all the subtle and overt ways that purity culture was affecting me. And, you know, I didn't even realize all the ways until actually, which is a big part of my story, I got into sexual trauma therapy after I was raped in 2016, right after the election of Donald Trump. And then that just like dove me into a whole other world that I didn't realize. And then I shared about my stories of having to rebuild myself after that to like not hate men, because I am a straight woman. And so I wanted to be in love with one at some point. And so all of those, those nuances, and those are super fun topics. And so, yeah. And now I have a book coming out on September 10th by the same title, God, Sex, and Rich People, A Recovering Evangelical Testimony. And I also have a TV show that is also in development. It just won the pitch for the TV show, just won the Audience Choice Award at the Yale Innovation Summit this last May. I've shot the pilot for it, but it's been sort of like a work in progress since 2021. So yeah, that's where I'm coming from.
I love it. I think you're coming from an amazing, I mean, wow, like just what an amazing story. And I know we're going to get to hear more about that today, but I think especially this conversation around like finding your way kind of into a more healthy expression of life and of your sexuality coming from the background that you come from with purity culture. One thing that I never like, I always like to clarify terms on this show because I never know who's listening. Now, you and I, and probably most of our listeners know what purity culture is, but just for the sake of defining what we're talking about, can you talk about what is purity culture?
Yeah, I think succinctly, because it is many things, right? But it is the idea that mostly a woman's, right? But like it includes men too, that as a person and our also our allegiance and proof of our allegiance to the Lord is wrapped up in our sexual activity. Like it is defined by how we conduct ourselves sexually. And you know, the stipulations are no sex until marriage, but no penetrative sex until marriage, right? No, because it's also very heavy in traditional gender roles. So purity culture is very heavy traditional gender roles. So it's only ever, you know, sex is only ever talked about within a man and a wife. Anything else is sinful and doesn't count. So they don't even talk about it. And then, you know, but it can, there are extremes. Like, you know, I learned that if you even have a sexual thought before you're married, that you are sinning. So masturbation is a sin,
Wow.
right? To which I would like, you know, be the snarky one in youth group and be like, but what if I'm imagining myself getting like fucked in a wedding dress? Then is it a sin? You know, so we love a workaround. But yeah, I mean, and it was like anything, like any sort of, I mean, there were people I knew who were not kissing until their wedding days. And that wasn't like, you know, these hill people on these TLC shows. These were like my friends in college, you know? And so it was very, it didn't seem extreme when you're living in it, but once you leave, you're like, whoa.
Yeah, which we're going to definitely get to that in just a minute. But before we get to that, so the purity culture is kind of the idea that you're kind of married to Jesus before you're married to your husband. Is this right? And there's rings, these purity
Rings,
rings.
right? The rings. So I was told with my ring, which is so ick, that the purity ring was a representation that I belong to my father and to my father in heaven until I am married, at which case we will exchange that ring for my wedding ring, and then I belong to my husband. And even saying that out loud, I'm like, how did no one around us think this was problematic? But at the time, I was like, that's so beautiful. You
You
know?
really cherished it.
Yeah. And also, like, with the caveat, and we can get to this at some point too, to say, like, my dad and my mom are amazing people, right? Like, they actually have been incredible through this whole journey with me. Like, they're very in support of everything I'm saying. They agree with a lot of it because they've had their own growth journey as well. But at the time, they were just teaching us what they thought was best for us. My mom grew up in the height of the 70s in high school, where everything was drugs and sex and very unsafe, and she didn't want us to repeat her offenses, I
Sure.
guess. And so she was teaching us what she thought was best, which is sex is best practice when you feel emotionally and physically safe, but that only can happen within the confines of marriage, right? Which now she would backpedal that, but at the time she didn't.
Sure. And so here you are living in rural Missouri. Which part of Missouri, by the way? I'm from Missouri.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Branson, baby.
Oh, shut up. I went to summer camp in Branson. Canada,
Canica,
oh, and you.
you
I know
get
it, girl.
it.
I get
That's
it.
all you had to
Yeah,
say. That's all you
that's
had to say.
extreme. Yeah, and I was not raised in purity culture, but that camp is probably the closest I've ever come. So
Well, then you went right to the epicenter, baby.
that is awesome. So here you are. Yes, okay. We have that.
Yeah.
Living in rural Missouri and Branson, and this purity culture thing is normalized. No one questions it, and you're cherishing it, and you're living out the valleys of that. And then something happens, and you move to New York City. So tell us kind of how does this progress, and how do we find you where you are here now, like kind of more liberated and talking about this openly?
Definitely. I'll try to give you bullet points because obviously it's been 12 years at this point. But yeah, so I thought I was going to do what everybody else did, marry my college sweetheart. He and I ended up breaking up late in my junior year. So I was a musical theater major. I always sort of felt, I talk a lot about this in the book. I do like deep dive around this stuff in the book. I always had this battle between like my love for New York City and my love for his name in the book is Brandon. And I felt that this was going to be a pool of like what was expected of me and what I really wanted to do. I didn't have the language for it at the time, but that was definitely always in conflict in college. And then we broke up. And so I was like, oh, well, I guess I just have to throw myself into this dream of moving to New York City. Like, I don't have a marriage out anymore. So I did. And I moved to New York City right after college. And through a very weird series of events, I did not end up living in like a gross apartment with roaches and 17 roommates. I actually ended up living with this guy who had inherited a penthouse apartment, four bedroom, four bath, terrace, doorman building, I don't want cleaning lady, like the whole nine yards for the 1% lifestyle in New York City. And I ended up living with him. And he was from a very wealthy Jewish family. And my other roommates were like this Indian woman and this Swedish woman. So there was like more diversity in my New York City apartment than all of my life in Missouri, right? And sort of just by accident, like I have a book or a chapter in my book called Baptism by Tinder Flame. And it's like, I went on these dates and I was taking my evangelical preset of like what it's like to date intentionally, date to marry. And it was going embarrassingly bad.
That's on Tinder,
And then,
on Tinder of all the apps out there, and not to
right.
mention.
I mean, how can you even go on a date within the confines of like date to marry with app dating? Because you don't even know these people. So how do you know if they're like marriage material? It's also like crazy. But anyways, that's what I was doing. And I was coming home from these dates and like talking to my roommate Andrew about it. And I was telling him about like, I just keep meeting all these Jewish guys on these dates and I can't marry them. We have different faith identities, you know? And he was like, and he would kind of be like, you know, he had little quips that he said like, oh yes, because your religious fantasy is superior to others' religious fantasies. And I was like, oh, fantasies, what, who do you think you are? You know? And I'd be like, I mean, I think that the Bible is founded in like history and archaeology and like all this stuff. And he was like, yeah, no, I get it. Christians get miracles. Everyone else gets stuff they made up. And it was like little conversations like that that I would have. Also the fact that like I was in musical theater. So like basically all my friends were gay and were they all going to hell? Like, you know, and I was having these conversations with people. Just, yeah. And then meeting people who like were just not even, I don't know. It's like you had these narratives back home of like anyone who was not Christian was like deeply unhappy, truly. Right. And like it is your job to show them that the reason they are deeply unhappy is because they do not know the Lord Jesus Christ. And I was like, I think everyone's pretty okay. I don't think they need my Jesus, you know? And then I went into this deep dive through conversations with Andrew of like books around scriptural criticism. And it was the first time I was studying scripture from a non-Christian perspective. And like from a true, like literally reading textbooks that are being taught at like, you know, Columbia Theology, right? And my mind is blown. I felt like, not that I had been lied to, I felt like I had been lied to, but like a lot of information was withheld. And then I would like get in conversations with my dad and be like, you know, dad, you're a pastor. If you know all this shit, why are you not telling this to your congregations? So I went through like the grief cycle of like losing my faith and not having that identity anymore. And like at a time when there was not language for it. So I felt very isolated in that. And then I just pendulum swung. And so I just like did everything, which we can also talk about. I mean, the sexual stuff I did in those early years, super unsafe. Like, but I had no education. I had no understanding of like, what does it feel like to be connected to my nervous system? What do I even want sexually? I didn't know any of that. All I knew is that I needed to make up for lost time.
Right.
So I was having a lot, I say in the book, like I wanted to have sex in the abstract, but when it came down to it, I didn't really want to. And there was a lot of like dissociation that was going on and putting myself in harmful situations. And so then it lands, I go through this sort of like overhaul in 2016 of like self-help journey, right? And I fall in love for the first time and I have that whole thing. And through a lot of that, I really healed a lot of the narratives that I was living by, sort of broke down, you know, how I felt like my whole life was a system of reward and punishment. And for the first time in my life, I felt like I had a say in my life. But then right as I thought like everything was getting better, Donald Trump gets elected, I get raped. And then I go through a whole other series of healing, right? Like years of healing. And so, through sexual trauma therapy, and I still see that therapist to this day, I was able to really excavate all of the nuanced ways that purity culture really was messing with my sex life and my life in general. And then because I was finally getting aware of some of those things, I was able finally, once I was ready to like implement some practices and explore in dating and then actually have like really amazing sexual experiences. And so I'm really passionate about helping women who are coming from purity culture sort of go through those, that the layers of the journey of like getting to a place where like dating and sex is really fun. So,
Cause I know, I mean, it really can do a number, but I want to back up a minute because I think that we think, oh yeah, purity culture, that's just for the evangelical Christian fundamentalist. And that really doesn't impact me, who's not from that background. But I think you speak to ways that that mentality really does permeate our culture, our secular culture. It shows up in ways that we might not even realize. And I wonder if you could speak to that just a little bit.
That was sort of a very devastating and disappointing reality that I had. I was like, oh shit, this doesn't stop at like the Kanakuk leaders, right? Like this stuff like permeates out into the world in like a really insidious way, where if you're not privy to these ideas, then like you don't know. I call them like misogynist daywalkers, and you have to get really practiced at identifying them.
I was talking about who are these misogynistic daywalkers and what do they look like? How do we identify this?
Right. So for example, right, I went through an experience where, and I have a blog post and it's also a chapter of my book called Too Soon, right? So let's use this as an example. Women have this idea, and men also have this idea, because I've talked to men about it and they'll bring it up and I'll be like, oh, no, you don't get to do this. It's the idea that if a woman sleeps with a man too soon, he is somehow justified in his losing interest. And so let's break that down, right? Or let's just say things are going great with this guy, and then date three, they have sex, and then he like stops calling and stops texting and all of the fallout, right? And then the woman's doing the thing of like, oh, I slept with him too soon. And that's why he, right? So let's break that down. If that's the case, right? If it is the case that this guy has lost interest in you because you had sex with him too soon, we don't know if that's true, but if it is, then that would mean we could surmise that this is the type of guy who bases a woman's value and intrigue on sex. And you have no other value outside of whether or not his penis went into your vagina. Is that a person that you want to continue dating? Right? Because aren't you a whole person, a whole human being with a brain and a body that is worthy of being enjoyed fully? Don't you want someone who sees you in that way as well? So there's that. There's also the fact that like he is shaming you for an activity he also participated
in. I'm so with you on this. It's such a double standard.
Right? And do you want to be with a guy who does that? Also, strangely, he's now unattracted to you because you chose to fuck him. What does that say about his self-esteem?
I always thought about this too. Like, so this idea of purity culture, right? Like, oh, if a man, it basically all it says is that men are dirty, because if you're going to defile me by sticking your cock in me, then hey, you're the one who is the dirty one then, right? I mean, that's what you're saying. Now I'm defiled because I had sex with you.
Yes, exactly. Let's break it down, you know? And then, so there's this famous line that my brother said to me. I'm like crying to him over like Sauvignon Blanc and this guy not calling him that, you know? And I'm like, I'm just so sick of this. Like, I want to have sex with men and like it be enjoyable and explore and feel liberated. But like, yes. How am I supposed to do that if they just keep like, stop talking to me once I've had sex with them too soon? And right. he goes, Maddie, that guy didn't stop being interested because you had sex with him. He was never interested to begin with.
Probably true. Yeah.
And I was like, fuck you, but also go on.
Yeah.
And he was like, so the only too soon here is that you don't like that. Let's like, and here's another thing, because we are not given these skills. We have a right. situation here where this whole scenario is watered down to, I gave it up too soon. Instead right. of looking at the full picture, which is like, okay, I don't like how it feels for a guy that I thought things were going well with to stop talking to me once we have sex. Therefore, what I need to do is give this a long enough amount of time to see what his level of interest actually is in yeah. me as a person. Because right. if he is truly interested in me, he will wait as like, I mean, within yeah. reason, right? He will wait as long as it takes
yeah.
to, you know, and if he's not interested in me, if it like, then he's going to show that before we yeah. have sex.
Sure.
But I'm just not giving it. And that's not an arbitrary timeline. That's right. just like tuning into myself. Is he listening to me on dates? Is he asking yeah. me interesting questions? Is he right? But instead, we just rob women fully of all of that. And we water it down to, well, you were too easy.
Right. And it's so socially acceptable for that mm-hmm. to happen, right? It's like, yeah. oh, well, you're just supposed to lean back and be in mm-hmm. your feminine and not worry that you just got ghosted by, right? But I think the more interesting part of this conversation is this piece you're speaking to, of you recognizing your own needs. Like, what do mm-hmm. I need? What do I require from this dating experience? And how do I take care of myself inside of that? So you just change mm-hmm. the narrative on it. And mm-hmm. I fully agree with that. And I love that. I think that that's really what it's about is what am I looking for? What do I need? And what do I need in order to vet this other person, you know, so that I can take care of me, right? Because mm-hmm. we don't really know where someone else stands. And I do think there's a lot to be said for giving that connection some time to kind of play out and sort of see mm-hmm. what's really here, you know? And
right.
then I think the flip side, though, is sometimes girls just want to have fun. You know, like,
yes.
you're not always, I got to say this, because we sort of get painted into a box of all women want is a relationship and how do you get him to commit? You know, look, we like to fuck too. Like
yeah.
sometimes just sex, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then still though, however, I feel like as women, we still get sort of shamed for that. And I mean, mm-hmm. I had a situation where the guy was like, oh, you know, we were going to maybe think about having sex. And he's like, oh, I don't, you know, it's okay. I won't judge you for not having sex. There were various reasons why maybe, you know, I don't know, you had to rush off and this mm-hmm. and that. He's like, yeah, I won't pressure you to have sex. I won't judge you for not having sex with me. And in my head, I'm going, oh my God, I was more afraid you were going to judge me if I did sleep with you right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bigger concern for me, right? It's so funny, like the total opposite, right? And it's interesting. Mm-hmm. I wonder, like, if I hadn't really had that narrative in my head at that time, like maybe I would have just gone for it. And maybe I wouldn't mm-hmm. have, I don't know. But it was so funny how it was like the total opposite narratives, right?
And yes.
Like never want to see me again and judge me because I had sex with you, you know, on the third date or whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just think like it was little things like that in the secular world that were like, or I would pick up on little things that like guys would say. I'd have to think of an example, but I don't know. I especially post Me Too, like if guys were like, oh yeah, you can't go up and talk to a girl at a bar anymore. You don't want to get Me Too'd. I'd be like, the fact that you don't know the difference between sexual assault and approaching a woman at a bar shows me that you're the problem, right? Like, these are not the same things,
yeah.
Right? And you can judge their, or you can gauge their responses to things. And you can share, I started using my blog as a decent vetter too. Like, when I would tell people, when I would tell men like about, cause I can't, I mean, I'm the easiest, like I'm so Googleable, you know, it's like,
yeah,
I'm on IMDb for my acting. I
right.
got a book
you, like out there in the world.
Right. Yeah. So we'd talk about it, and if immediately the conversation turned to them being like, basically turning conversation to like only sex, I was like, oh, so you think that me talking about sex means that you're just cool to sexualize me? Or if it was not cool with them, which is a totally fine response too. Like if it's not cool with you, it's not cool with you. But like, if you've never read my blogs, you're just judging me by the fact that like I openly discuss sex on a public forum. You've never even read them, and your immediate response is like, oh, well, I could never bring her home to mom, so let's like nip this in the butt. Now it's like, okay, well, that's like misogyny. And then then like the only acceptable response to me was if I like said, oh yeah, I write about like purity culture and overcoming all the blah, 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 right, give them the spiel, and they go, oh wow, that's really interesting, can you tell me more? That's the only acceptable response, right? So I started to learn to vet guys in that way. I would also talk to them about their moms, I'd talk to them about their sisters. And so I would gauge like what is their relationship, because it almost consistently, if guys had poor relationships with their moms, obviously there's nuance there, but if they spoke about their moms in a really disrespectful way, I found that to be a very bad sign. It proved to be. So yeah, it was things like that that I started to get privy to. Now, like I say, all of this was saying like the guy who I experienced date rape from was like a super liberal UN diplomat. So like even these liberal guys,
Oh yeah, I mean, just
they can
what
come
you
through and be
stand.
like behind closed doors, right? And it was other things, like if we're talking about, sexual assault, and they say things like, well, is alcohol involved? And granted, that's a whole other conversation too. That's very nuanced, but it's like, yeah, but like when I get too drunk, I want to eat Taco Bell and go to sleep without washing my face. I don't want to rape a person. So like, what are the underlying cultural norms that we have conditioned men into to think that like when their inhibitions are down, it is to take advantage of someone? So yeah.
Yeah, that's a
But
lot. So
yeah,
no,
sorry.
that's great. I mean, it's like a whole other podcast series on just on that piece
Right.
alone. I want to bring it back to the purity culture piece. And I wonder if you can share a little bit about there's people listening out there that can really relate to your story that are still really trapped in the negative shame spiral that I think purity culture can really put on everybody, but women in particular. And I really would love to know about like what would you say to people listening who maybe haven't been able to take that step? How do people find their way into a healthier relationship with their bodies and with sexuality?
That's a great question. Well, I mean, you can read my blog. I do have a lot of resources there, and I feel like just by telling story, there are like their books. In my book, I have like a list of like further reading, that there are accounts such as like Erica Smith is a sex educator, and she educates specifically around purity culture. Dr. Camden Morgante talks a lot about purity culture and recovering from it, like even within a marriage. So I feel like if you just go to Instagram and like put in the hashtag like purity culture dropout or ex-purity ring wearer, like things like that, you will find a lot of accounts that have phenomenal resources. And then the algorithm will get to know you, and it will start to give you more information. But I think really, I know that Linda K. Klein, she is the author of this book, Pure, that I kind of call her like the
Heard of her.
foremother. Yeah. I call her the foremother of purity culture literature, because she was sort of like, she pioneered it. And it took her forever to get her book published, because it was just before its time. And then it released in 2016. So it ended up being like perfect timing, right? It was when the world could actually hear it because of like Donald Trump and evangelicals and all of that. So that's a great book, but she also provides coaching for purity culture trauma healing. There are purity culture healing support groups. I mean, obviously people like you are an amazing resource, because so much of the process is getting in touch with your body and actually knowing like what is my nervous system telling me? Because all of our conditioning as in purity culture is and religion is to like dismiss our bodies and our minds, that we're that's evil, right? Like, don't listen to them. So it's like relearning all of that. And then look, I know therapy is inaccessible. I was lucky enough that I actually got my therapist through Planned Parenthood, through like a social worker and like a nonprofit they were connected to. So I got him for free initially. I do pay for him now. but I, like, you know, I think getting, there are so many more practitioners now that are privy to purity culture and religious trauma, and they weren't when I was seeking it. And it's much better now.
I know one thing I've run into around this, and if you feel comfortable getting personal, please, but don't feel obligated to like respond to this. But one thing that I've seen where people really struggle is they still, when they think of God, they think of the church. And so there's sort of this conflation of God equals the church, and the church has told them all these bad things, you know, your body is bad, sex is a sin, to the extent they can't even enjoy sex within the marriage. They don't know how their bodies work, how to even find pleasure. And they feel bad if they do get pleasure, even though they're now married. You know, it's a shit show in a lot of ways. But one of the things that I found is part of that process of expanding and healing some of those negative influences has to do with repatterning your relationship with God. That God doesn't have to, no longer has to equal the church. We have to unwind the idea that what the church is God, right? This overseer that implements rules and dogma and shame. That God can be, you can have a brand new relationship with God, and maybe you need to call God something different for a little while, or maybe not, but actually like pulling those two things apart and really creating a new relationship of who is God to me? What do I want my relationship with God to be? What's the new rules that I'm going to play by? What's the new story I'm going to live by? Who is God for me and in my life? So I'm kind of curious if that was like a process that you went through, or if you have seen others kind of get stuck there or find their way out of that, just kind of around that piece.
Yeah. So, I mentioned in sort of my not so bullet pointy, journey, that I did this like self-help overhaul that happened. And like, I was feeling so much better. That was a big part of that. When I was doing, it was like over a period of time, but like it started, I would say I started to redefine who God was in my life when I started doing the scriptural criticism research, because I was like, which I think is a very important part of the like sort of deconstruction process, because you need to see for yourself that this version of Jesus that we were given is like the tiniest little bastardized Western version of him. It is not fact. And it was taught to us as if it was capital A, capital T, absolute truth. And it's not. It just isn't. Like, and if you read enough books, you will find that. I mean, even the canonized version of the New Testament, right? It's like when the Council of Nicaea came together, you had all these people who were like, well, some people think that Jesus was fully spirit, the Gnostics. Some people think he was fully man. Some people think he was both. You know what? Let's slap them all together and call it the Holy Spirit. Okay, now that we're all on the same page, let's go ahead and only select books that are in full support of that view of Jesus. And that's why certain Gnostics didn't make it into the canon. That's why, you know, and if you can go back even that, right? Or even look at the fact that like the Catholic canon is different from the Protestant canon. Who's got the absolute truth? The first people? Or the people who came later, like, you know, it's like you can start breaking those things down. You know, Bart Ehrman has a ton of amazing books that break down a lot of this. He's a scriptural criticism expert. And so I think like that for me was the beginning of liberation of being like, oh, I don't have to buy into this package.
Like the one thing you were told. So I actually have my background in the academic study of religion. Lo and behold, that's my bachelor's undergraduate studies. That's a world religion, comparative religion. So I can totally geek out on all this stuff. And
same.
And I In a nutshell, what you're saying is that to have a different perspective other than what you're just taught at Sunday school can really open your eyes. And at the end of the day, I don't know, I do think there are fundamental truths that exist, but it's also relative in how we relate to it and how we perceive and how, right? Like, it's not independent of the co-creation of our belief system and how we perceive the world. Those things can change as our perception changes. What's true can also change. Though I do think there's certain universal laws, for example, right? Like
Totally.
gravity releases a law here on Earth.
Yeah.
So right. So what you're saying for you, just it kind of really helped like open your mind that there's other narratives, there's other, and the reasons that those stories got passed on are probably not the reasons you were taught in Sunday school. I mean, if anybody's listening, Councils of Nicaea. I mean, it was Constantine. Emperor Constantine wanted to create a religion to
A
unify
royal
the
religion.
empire. It was a way to unify.
Yes.
It was a political move, basically
Totally.
move. And that has not left today. I mean, look at what we see in our political leaders. Like
A
using
hundred
religion as a
percent.
way to try to further the political agenda. So anyway, that again, we're gonna have to do a part
Yeah.
two of this and go down the
Yes,
rabbit
we
hole. But
absolutely should.
go
Yeah.
back
And
to
then it, yeah.
original question of like finding one's way out and sort of reestablishing what God is for you in your life, that it doesn't have to be related to sort of what you were spoon-fed growing up in purity culture.
Yes, and I think like getting through that like scriptural criticism, and I can totally nerd out on it. It's so lovely when I find people who I can. It's like my boyfriend is like total New Jersey, like he's got like a sleeve tattoo and like biceps that are as big as my head. Like he's just like totally the opposite of like where I was raised. And whenever me and my like ex-evangelical friends get together, he's just like, I have no idea what you guys are talking about. But like scripture was such a big part of what we were raised with that now that we have this like reclamation of it, we love to nerd out on it, right? So there's like that. And then there was also once I felt like I didn't have to follow this very specific like way, then I eventually had to reconcile the fact that I actually was not a Christian, because I don't believe that Jesus is the Messiah who like came to die for our sins of humanity, and the only way to God is through him. I believe other things, but I don't believe that. I don't believe in hell. I don't believe in heaven. Like I had to kind of reconcile a lot of that, which was scary. But the chapter in the book is hell yes, oh fuck, because it's when I realized I don't believe in hell.
Great.
It was like when I realized I would be one going to hell, then I had to decide if I believed in it, and here are all the reasons why I don't believe in it. And then there was that like third thing, which was the personal development chapter of my life, which was like I realized how much of the narrative from my evangelical background was like self-hate and diminishing, and that I never ever said a nice thing to myself. Because as women, we're taught to be like demure and meek, and like you can't be too loud, you can't be too big, you can't, all of these things, that's not attractive. And so like I never thought I could be like confident. I mean, I had like raging eating disorders for a very long time, and it wasn't until this chapter of my life that I was finally able to heal my eating disorders, because I was like, oh, this is work from the inside out. These are like narratives that I just go on all the time. And then there was also like going back to what I said earlier, I realized I felt like my whole life was a system of reward and punishment, that God was the puppeteer making everything happen. And then I realized, oh, I make everything happen. Like what I believe translates into how I act, which translates into action and things happening in my life. So I actually have a say in my life, whereas before I didn't. I felt helpless. I felt like, well, if I'm not a Christian and I'm not behaving in like these specific ways, then I'm gonna be punished. And like, that's why I don't have any acting jobs. And that's why I don't have a boyfriend. And that's why I'm fat. Like, literally, that's what I thought.
Just toxic. Yeah. And I mean, I could say so much about that, but this whole idea of the unworthiness thread that tends to weave through sort of the mainstream expressions of Christianity is so distorted and so out of alignment with really what we're meant to be. I mean, again, not to get off topic here, but yeah, I don't think we need to go into church on Sunday morning and scream I'm so unworthy. Like, I'm not singing this song. I'm not gonna sit there and like about how unworthy I am. Like, fuck that. Like, no. Like,
Yes. Yes, like I am nothing without you. I am but rags or whatever. And I'm like, I just don't believe that that's true. Like
I
my dad
know.
will still see, my dad is like one of the most amazing people on planet Earth. He affects the world in a positive way, whatever he's doing. And he'll still say things sometimes like, yeah, but I'm like nothing without like Jesus's influence in my life. And I'm like, Dad, that's just not true. Like you are a very amazing person. You know, like this idea that being humble means to like
Humility.
diminish,
Right. It
you
doesn't.
know?
Humility. Right. There's humility. Being humble versus being unworthy and worthless are two totally different things.
So I think to like summarize like the God view, yeah, I had to realize that like I didn't have to be this very specific way. And God is not a God of like punishment and keeping people in line. The best way that I can serve God, if I believe in a higher power, which I do, is to live in alignment with how I was authentically created.
Yeah,
And part of that is like I am a horny, outspoken, strong woman. And I'm not, because I love what you said earlier, like sometimes we do want to fuck. Like that's
like
true,
to
you
have
know? Like
sex, yeah.
it's, and I'm gonna own that. That is who I am, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And part of our humanity, you know, if we are made in the image of God, I don't know if you believe that and whatever that's supposed to mean. But nonetheless, then we have sexual energy literally is the source of creation. Like none of us would be here if it weren't for somebody sticking it in, you know, like we all came out of a vagina, I'm pretty fucking sure. And there's a fetus involved. Everyone's had
Yes.
involved somewhere along the way, I'm
So
pretty sure.
even given modern science, we have to have a penis.
You know what I'm saying? So like part of our expression of divinity, in my opinion, is our sexuality, which is it's the most powerful force in the universe because it can literally create new life. So, you know, there's lots of reasons why it's so scary and it's a threat and it gets suppressed. Religious, you know, suppressed that. And specifically the manifestation of sexuality, which happens through the body, and the body is the feminine aspect. So much of our mainstream Christianity comes from, you know, the suppression of the feminine. Feminine is the expression of the body, body mind, right? Mind is masculine, body is the feminine expression. And so just as a way to kind of kill off that aspect of our divinity, the sexuality has been repressed. And let's talk about this blueprint that, you know, you decided that the best thing you can do is live to the fullest expression of who you truly are and the way that you are. And you have something called the blueprint for boning. So I think now would be a great time to talk about that.
A blueprint for boning. I think that's gonna be the title of my next book.
Our next book.
Yeah, it's so it's basically just your sexual ethic, right? And like, how do you determine your sexual ethic? Well, you have to have sex. You have to be in relationship to other people, and explore that. And I call it like go from dating to marry to dating for data, and like really become like an Olympic level investigator when it comes to each and every one of your experiences. So when you walk away from an experience, oh, what did I like about that? What did I not like? Can I like dissect that a little bit further? You know, like I remember I went on a date, a really last minute date, with this guy from a dating app, whatever. I call him brunch guy. I don't know his name.
Brunch man.
And brunch guy. And
Tasty.
we had, yeah, we had so much fun. We had, you know, some mimosas, whatever. I went back to his place. We hooked up. It was really hot. I felt like, oh my gosh, this was so great, whatever. And then we like sexy text the next couple of days. We have sex again. The sex is like really good. But then afterwards, we go and get food. And I'm like learning more about him. And I'm like, ew, I don't really like you that much. And like a very interesting dynamic, right? Because I'm like, wait, but I love his like aggression and ferocity and like love for my vagina. Like he's so
Yeah.
into it. And that's so hot. And like the novelty of like just showing up and he's like, I
Yeah.
don't really know anything about him. And so I just get to like enjoy his body.
Right.
And then once I got to know more about him, I was like immediately turned off and I didn't want to have sex with him anymore. I was like, oh no, you know, and like that, but that was like an okay experience for me to have. 'Cause I was like, wait, I walked away from that. What did I learn? Oh, there is some novelty in newness. There is some novelty in anonymity for me. That's, you know, what did I like about how he treated me sexually? Again, naming it off, ferocity, a little bit of aggression, you know, but it's also playful. He really seemed to delight in my body and he was like verbal about it. And I really liked that. But then like outside of the bedroom, I was like, you are not a person I would ever want to spend more time with. And that is okay too.
Yeah, that's
You
perfectly
know,
valid.
and then in other situations, like, you know, just again, dissecting them, like, okay, at which point am I okay having sex with a person? And for me, what I figured out is like, I don't need them to be like, I don't need to know that we have like long-term potential. I just need to feel
Yes.
respected. I
Right.
need to feel known, appreciated, and respected. That doesn't mean like known to the depths of me in the most like intimate of ways. It just means that like they think I'm cool and they're into like what I'm into. You
Yeah.
know, that's all that means. And like I, again, getting better at like gauging the misogynist daywalkers, like I had to make sure that we were on the same page in terms of like how we viewed female sexuality. Because we, if we weren't on the same page with that, we weren't, I was not going to feel safe. I was not going to feel connected. I wasn't going to feel free to open up. And so, I mean, these are more like general, but this is sort of how, so the blueprint for boning isn't like, you know, first you give him a blowjob and then he goes down on you
Oh,
and then
right.
you pull out the wand, you know, it's like, no, it's more of like, what is your sexual ethic? When do you feel, and that's
Right.
able to change because I did
Sure.
get to a point, you know, right before I met Ken, where I was like, you know, I've had a lot of really amazing experiences. And I'm just at the point now where like, I actually don't want to have sex with anyone unless they're going to be my
Yeah.
significant other. I'm just at
Yeah.
that point in my life, you know, like that's what I'm looking for. And to be
Sure.
honest with myself about that.
Yeah.
But like, I was listening to another one of your podcasts, about like men becoming like rock star lovers,
Oh,
which
yeah. It's a good one.
listeners, if you haven't listened, it's so good. I was like sending my partner bits and pieces of it. Like, such great conversation. And, you know, I think another part of the blueprint for boning for me was learning how to facilitate really great sex as a feminine being.
Yeah, that can
Because
be a challenge for a lot of women. A lot
yes.
of
And so figuring that out, like, how do I really tune in and gauge where this guy is and what he needs? So like, for example, I had like really great sex after a date. And it was like, I had been getting to know him. He was like my scene partner in my acting class. Ugh, cringe, I know, but it worked out. And then the next morning we were, you know, trying to have sex and we were in the shower and he just like couldn't make it happen. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to push this. And then later when we call it afterwards at the taco truck, we're getting food. And I was like, so do you want to like, not do you want to, I said, so I think we should talk about what happened this morning. And he kind of like, you know, I was like, well, here's the thing. I am not intimate with people without having intimate conversations. And I need to know what was going on with you so that I can show up and be a good partner for you. And then he, and like, so what I learned is that like so many men do not have safe spaces emotionally with women, particularly ones that they want to show up and like be sexually like performance with. And if you give them the space to like be vulnerable, they will, the next time it will be amazing, like every time. So
Yeah,
it
I
was
think
things
on
like
that
that
issue,
too.
it's a lot of how you, yeah, there's a whole other conversation. Bring it up. And actually, Kevin and I might have talked, I think we did, we talked about that in that episode, How to Be a Rockstar Lover, Sex Talk Cafe. I can't remember what episode number, but y'all can find it. And I think, yeah, when what you're speaking to, this blueprint for boning is really what it comes down to, at least how I would articulate it from my perspective, is really that we know that we know our needs. What it, because that has been
Mm-hmm.
the case for me as well. There's been times where I, you know, there's high emotions and I know that if I have sex and you ghost me, that's going to be painful. So no, I have different needs than I might if it's like, this is a tasty snack and I'm interested in just, you know, let's just have some
Yeah.
fun, right? My needs might be different. The expectations are different. And I think what it really comes down to is that we know ourselves well enough to know what our needs are, which can be remarkably harder than it sounds, especially if you come from, well, like many of us do just as women in general in our culture, but especially purity culture of having to shut down your own desires to please others or just because they're wrong and you shouldn't have any and you've got to give your life over to something else. It can be very challenging to actually learn how to do that and how to cultivate that. But what I will say is that that is a skill that can absolutely be learned. And really, as you pointed out, Maddie Jo, is really the key to the pleasure and having pleasure in a sexual encounter, much less in life in general.
Yes, 100%. So what you're saying is like just so much a part of the evangelical experience is suffering. Like there is a pedestalization of suffering. So if you are the like the more you're suffering, like the more you are alignment within with what Christ wants for you. And so if you're a woman who's be like, dude, I love my life and I love to have sex and I'm really cool with like eating food that I like. You're like, oh, you know, like that is the worst thing you
You're
could be as a
a
woman
sinner.
who's okay with her pleasure, you know? Yeah. And, yeah. And this whole like self-deprivation, like it's not of me, it's for the Lord, right? Like it's just these narratives at every single.
That just really, yeah, it really takes really can mess us up in sex, especially because sex is really about pleasure, enjoyment, expanding, opening, embodying those things. And if you've been ingrained that that's bad and that you're unholy and you're sinning, should you dare to enjoy, dare to learn your body, dare to touch yourself, dare to, you know, actually have sex that's enjoyable, then it means all these bad things. And yes, a lot of unholy. Well, so we're getting near the end of our time today, but yeah, I think we need to do a part two at some point for sure.
I would
And
love that.
we'll dig in on some of these other things that we couldn't go into in detail today. But before we wrap up, is there anything else that you feel is really important for our listeners to hear about, you know, your main message here today about purity culture and being sexually liberated and a healthy sexual woman?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a big thing that a lot of women come to me with is like they want to explore themselves sexually, but they have a very hard time finding the way to do that. And a like a partner that feels safe, a partner that feels consistent. Like I know I had that too. It's like, God, can I just like have sex with one person for like a year? That would be really nice because there's only so much you can explore if you're only sleeping with people for like 2 to 3 months at a time. And I totally get that. And what I would say is, and this is again like the practice, what you're saying, like, right? It's a skill, it's a practice. But I think like say yes to things and just see where it goes. So like, for example, I had sort of like the best sex of my life. I also wanted to say like, and best sex of my life happened like during the pandemic. And I think it's because I didn't have shit going on. Like, I think like I was able to relax, you know?
Actually show up for the event.
Right, exactly. But also maybe also ironic because like we weren't supposed to be near each other. But anyway, I just come off of what I was sure would be like the best sex of my life. I would never get anything better. And I was like, I could say I was devastated because of like him when it ended, but really I was very devastated. I wasn't going to be able to continue having sex with him. And 'cause we were seeing each other for like 3 months, whatever. And then I met this other guy like a year later. And, you know, I'm at a place where like I feel like I'm ready for a relationship, whatever. And he pretty clearly after we have like great sex, of course, after the fact is like, look, I'm not open to a relationship. I just got divorced. This is the first time in my life I'm exploring being on my own. I am not open to it. And I like had a moment where I was like, okay, to say yes to this is going to be neglecting these other things that I
Right.
say I want temporarily. But like, he's offering consistent,
yeah.
really good exploratory sex. All right, I'm saying yes. And like
yeah.
owning, and we went on to have like an amazing sexual relationship for over a year. And I'm so glad that I said yes to that experience. So like, but part of that was also tuning into where, when it was no longer working for me, because I did have feelings for him and I did want other things. But again, that's a practice in showing up for yourself and being able to follow through with what you say you need, right?
I love that.
So I think like there's nuance in all of these things, and there's going to be all these narratives around like, well, you're settling if it's just a situationship.
Oh.
It's like, you know, sometimes situationships really serve a time and a need, and
me
like
too.
I think you should go for it, you know.
I can relate to that, and
you know?
I love kind of what, yeah, not to stop you there, but we need to wrap up. I just want to add one thing to what you're offering, and I think it's brilliant because it's about sometimes it's a careful balance, but sometimes the checklists and the check boxes, like just fucking get rid of those, like just be open and some spaciousness and see what shows up and right. And the saying yes to that, I mean, as long as it aligns and, you know, like that was, again, myself, I had one of the best experiences I ever had was because I got rid of the check boxes. That person wouldn't like fit into all my ideas. But right, and we're sort of ingrained that too as women, like you're supposed to want these certain things, and if they don't fit into that, then you know, you could really miss out on a lot of really amazing people and amazing experiences by getting too in that. So I love, that's great advice.
Yes.
I'd love you to tell our listeners how they can find you and get in touch with you.
Yeah. So follow me. I know it'll be in the show notes, but at Instagram at Mattie Jo Cowsert, MattieJoCowsert. That's where I am the most. I'm also on Facebook, but like I'm mostly on Instagram. Go to my website. It's getting revamped right now, but like everything Mattie Jo is there. So like book, everything like that. My blogs. If you DM me on Instagram, I can send you like a reader starter packet. So you don't get too lost in like, because there's a lot of content there. And then subscribe to my blog, MattieJoCowsert.com. You can subscribe there. And my, of course, my book comes out September 10th. You can pre-order it. So I've been sharing like the pre-order links on my stories. And then, like I said, it's going to be on my website soon, but also DM me. I can also give you the link and you can put it in your show notes. So, or if you buy it on September 10th, that gives it like a really good boost for like bestsellers. So either set a timer or set a reminder on your phone for September 10th or pre-order it, whatever's easiest for you. So those are the ways.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being my guest today on the Sex Talk Cafe.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. This was delightful.
Thank you for joining me today for the Sex Talk Cafe. Please be sure to show your support by subscribing to this podcast and sharing it with your friends. To keep in the loop on future events and happenings, and to grab your copy of our free ebook, The Pleasure Keys, 7 Secrets to Feminine Sexual Fulfillment, visit us online at pathwaytopleasure.com.